Welcome to
Behind the Beat,
a podcast hosted by Sylvia
and Maya.
Hi everyone, welcome to our first episode of Behind the Beat. I'm Maya.
And I'm Sylvia.
And today, for our first episode, we're going to be covering topics of mental health, burnout, performance anxiety, imposter syndrome. As classical musicians and instrumentalists, we experience these issues daily, I feel like, as we sit in a practice room and we perform for other people. I feel like it's inevitable to feel these feelings. So we're going to kind of dive into it, give our advice, give our takes, and just things that we have gone through. So starting out with the topic of burnout, how have you personally experienced / witnessed burnout within yourself or other people, and what have you done to deal with it, or go through the processes of getting out of burnout more so?
Right. I think burnout is something that pretty much everyone has experienced, mm-hmm. especially in something that's as personal and as rigorous as classical music. I think it's just kind of inevitable. How I've experienced it, I would say I get burnt out from time to time, especially when I'm preparing for something and then it happens. And then after that kind of adrenaline is gone, then I'll feel burnt out for a couple days. Or if there's just been kind of a lack of inspiration or motivation in my life, especially in the practice room, if I'm not finding ways to keep going. How I deal with it, I would say that I look for ways to inspire myself, and they could be related to playing or not related to playing. Something that would be kind of in the same realm of music is finding other people to collaborate with, or looking online to listen to performances that inspire me, listening to other genres of music, and taking that as inspiration. Maybe also doing other forms of art, or even going to performances that have nothing to do with music, like going to a play or something of that nature, and seeing how other people express themselves through art, and then also utilizing that to combat the burnout and mm-hmm. find new perspectives
yeah.
that I can draw on. What about you? How have you experienced burnout?
I feel like doing the same thing every single day for your whole life, as you said, inevitable to experience burnout. And I think it's not just music where you experience burnout. Obviously, you could experience burnout in any other field or any other passion or thing that you just do. And I feel like it's not talked about enough, because I feel like there's this idea that you always have to be at 100%. You have to know exactly what you want for yourself and always be working hard and doing this and, you know, achieving this and that. And I feel like because of that idea of it, not only is it not talked about, but it puts an even bigger pressure on yourself when you're feeling it, being like, wow, no one else is going through this feeling, like, why can't I just, like, get up and do what I want to do? And it's just, like, this horrible feeling that, you know, like, no one really wants to be feeling. And I think I have dealt with that a lot in my life, all the way back from, like, elementary school. And I feel like the way I have dealt with it is, as mentioned before, I run very well on structure. And I think one form of structure that helps is having, like, things like a practice log or like a schedule for myself. So, like, you know, I feel like people, when they have things like to-do lists or tasks or goals for themselves, they are a lot more willing to check those things off or get that done, because it's like in your mindset, it's written down. And I started actually this year, it was more to just log my hours and see my like patterns within practice, but I started like a practice log throughout this semester, and I feel like that's really helped me to like keep myself accountable, but also be like, oh, like when I have, I'll see like, oh, when I have other things like this that I don't have as much time to practice, so where can I allocate more time? And I feel like putting it in that way not only keeps yourself like in check, but also helps you to not overdo it, because then you realize like, oh, like you might be so in the zone that you might be like, without even knowing it, putting your like body physically and your like mental health through more than you've realized, because you're like, oh, I have to get this done. So like, I feel like the practice log and the practice schedule, like, oh, I want to get this piece done by this day, I want to record this by this day, has been a very like helpful thing for me. And I feel like through that, I feel like I haven't really experienced burnout yet. Crossing my fingers, don't want to jinx that. But I feel like it's really helped me like keep grounded, I feel like. And I feel like burnout, I mean, it's going to happen regardless, but avoiding it in that term, I feel like, is a healthy way of managing it.
Right.
And I think has been really helpful for me. But in the past, I feel like I dealt with it really unhealthily, where I would be super out of it, where I just would not practice, did not care anything about music, and I just had to literally be like dragged and pushed by my mom and my teachers until I was finally like, okay, I have to. And it would be like another like hill. It felt like constant like ups and downs, and I feel like just now am I starting to figure out how to stabilize it.
Right.
But yeah, it's a hard thing that I'm sure I'm going to have to deal with. Both of us are going to have to deal with our entire lives. And it's, you know, it's a process.
Right. But it's just part of it.
It is. Yeah.
No, I like what you mentioned about kind of preventing burnout before it happens and not waiting until you're burnt out to kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
I think something related to that is that I was recently reading that the way to keep yourself motivated is to have little rewards. And like, no matter how small they are, even the smallest things, such as checking something off a to-do list or crossing something out, like the tiniest task can actually make it seem a lot more rewarding to do something. So I would say for me, like something that helps with burnout is giving myself things to look forward to as motivation. So maybe I'll tell myself like, oh, if I finish working on this, or if I do this much practice before the end of the day, then I can go out with my friends later and just kind of doing things that keep me on track, so I have something to look forward to and it's not just an endless cycle of work.
100% agreed.
So next we want to talk a little bit about performance anxiety, which is something that a lot of classical musicians and performers in general have dealt with and continue to deal with. Maya, what techniques and strategies have you found most helpful in calming nerves before going on stage?
Oh, that's so hard. I think that I have experienced, like, I have experienced nerves and, like, anxiety with performance. Even if it's just, like, me giving a speech in front of a class, I am nervous for that. I have so much anxiety. So it's not just me performing on my instrument, because I feel like performing on an instrument is something that we should probably feel the most confident about, right? Because that's something that we do every single day. That is what we're literally majoring in and our strongest like art form. But I don't think no matter how, what level I'm playing at or who I'm playing for, I'm gonna have nerves and performance anxiety. So I think I've really had to learn how to manage it, because it's not gonna go away for sure. It's not something that just goes away. You're gonna just have to do best with, you know, what's given. And I feel like obviously like preparation is a big one. You want to mentally already know exactly how you're going to play. You might even want to imagine what kind of audience you're going to have, so you know what to expect when you look out on stage. You want to know like, oh, like you don't want to be like making last minute changes or thinking about the interpretation or what your teacher said on the day of. Like, you, I feel like what comes out in the performance is what naturally comes out, right? Because your brain is kind of like on autopilot almost. So like, you have to, like, I try to practice in the practice room, not only imagining performing, but, like, playing it at, like, 110% almost. Like, so confident to the point where most likely I'll play at, like, 90 or 95% in a performance, and I'll be, like, satisfied, you know? Like, it's just, like, a factor of, like, very much preparation, as I feel like it's a huge thing, and that is self-explanatory, but I've realized, like, you can definitely tell when I don't feel fully confident in my performance or don't fully feel prepared, because it definitely shows and definitely adds to the nerves as well. So I think over preparation, just having like imagining the performance and the audience and the setting itself are two things I think that are some strategies. Not strategies, I guess, but just things that I am constantly aware of before going on stage.
Yeah, I really agree with the preparation aspect.
Yeah.
Because this actually reminds me, I was lucky enough to study with Amal Gochenour over the summer, who's a piccolo player in the Baltimore Symphony.
Yeah.
And she was saying that how she prepared for the audition was so intensely detailed to the point where she went online and Googled all of the orchestra members and printed out pictures of them and then taped them around her apartment, like in the spots where they would be sitting. Because she had like I forget what it's called, like a play along or play off, something like that.
Yeah.
Where she was sitting in the orchestra with them. So, and she was saying that she had to make eye contact with, I think it was the concertmaster or someone in the string section, and they were wearing the exact same shirt as the picture that she printed out. So it, like, she prepared so well, like down to knowing their exact faces.
Yeah.
And then when she went on stage, it was still intimidating, but she knew exactly what to expect. She knew what the hall looked like. She knew the what the people looked like. So I think, yeah, preparation can definitely help with performance anxiety and play a huge role.
Yeah, that's crazy. I thought you were going to say, like knew every note to, like, the, like, to the, like, it's like millisecond of everything, or like the music or something, but I didn't even think about like atmosphere in terms of like the members or the people you're gonna see. I feel like that's so smart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was very interesting to learn, because I would never even think about doing that.
No.
And she just did so much research beforehand on things that had nothing to do with the actual music, but it all helped the music come out better. Because just knowing what to expect so you're not overwhelmed by all these other stimuli that have nothing to do with the music.
Yeah, agreed.
And another thing, I think in the same vein as preparation, is kind of knowing that what you do in the practice room has to be enough when you get to the performance. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't expect a performance to be 10 times better than your practice sessions have been. So I think, like, what you do in the practice room matters a lot more. And then if you're prepared and if you work on it so that you get to the point where you feel confident enough to go on stage, then that's really all you can do. And then once you get out there, you're not more likely to make a mistake than you are in the practice room. It's just that you're aware of it.
Yeah.
So I think kind of going, not on autopilot, but letting the music take over and trusting in the work that you did.
Yeah.
Is really essential for that. And of course, obviously, knowing that the audience is on your side and they're rooting for you, they don't want you to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Like, even in auditions, the panel and the committee want someone to stand out and impress them.
Yeah.
They don't want you to crumble and crash and like crack every single note.
Yeah.
For the most part, people are rooting for you on stage. So mm-hmm. I think that's something that's also really important to remember.
Agreed. That's why I appreciate things like how you were saying how, like, you can't just expect something in a practice room to go. You can't rely on, like, oh, the performance, it'll be fine because adrenaline and the performance will carry me. That's almost, like, 99% never the case. That's why I appreciate things like when teachers do, like, mock auditions or, like, practicing, like, playing for a panel or even, like, studio class for that matter once I think about it, because those are, yes, practices, but those are, like, performance practices. And I feel like being in that setting has, like, and taking classes where I was forced to be in that kind of setting has definitely helped me a lot to prepare for the real deal of a audition or a performance or a recording or something. So
right.
I feel like, yes, just practice.
Yeah, just practice.
Just practice, basically. Another point in performance anxiety is, how do you handle the pressure of wanting to give a perfect performance? Obviously, a perfect performance doesn't exist. We just get as close as it as we can get. And then, have you found any ways to, like, have to shift your mindset in these moments where you have to, you feel like you have to, like, strive for perfection?
Right. I think really unpacking what you want out of the performance is key. If it's something like a concert, then I try to just remind myself it's not about perfection at all, actually. Like, the audience does not care if every single note is exactly in tune. If I'm not conveying what I want to convey through the music, or it's not speaking to them, it's not musical, then it really doesn't matter if all the notes are there.
Yeah.
I think I would much rather watch a performance where someone is so, like, into it and they're so expressive, rather than having every note perfect.
Agreed.
It's just not really something that you should strive for on stage, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we always want to portray our best technical capabilities, but I think on top of that, having the bigger picture in mind is more important in the long run.
No, and I feel like, I don't know why we just assume that, like, intonation is the only thing that we need to practice, and that's the definition of a perfect performance, because intonation is what? One of the hundreds of factors that you can put into your performance. Like, I feel like that's just, like, baseline. And if it's not perfect, it's okay. Like, it wasn't made to be perfect, you know? And I feel like we need to, I'm talking to myself as well, I need to get out of the mindset of being like, my performance was bad because I missed that note, I missed this note, I didn't play this chord into. Okay, like, it's okay, you put so much more into performance that spoke to the audience than playing a wrong note, I feel like. And we really need to get out of that mindset, I feel like.
Exactly. Yeah, I think sometimes striving for perfection almost makes it harder to have a performance that's more, like, captivating for the audiences. Because I know I can definitely tell if someone's on stage and they're in their head about every single note and they're getting too, like, nitty-gritty about, oh, I need to crescendo right here, versus someone who goes on stage and they're just so confident and they're very expressive and they just kind of listen to what their musical image is that they have in their mind and focus on conveying that to the audience rather than the little things.
Agreed.
Maya, what is your approach to staying present during a performance? So once you're on stage, like, how do you not get in your own head?
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I feel like everyone talks about how do you prepare to, you know, for a performance? How do you, like, deal with it after? But I feel like, what about during, right? Because when you're during a performance, like, it's a whole nother, like, zone that you're in, I feel like, mentally. And it could either be in a good way where you're so locked in and you're so in it and you're just, it doesn't even feel like a performance almost. You're just like playing what is naturally coming out. But it could also be in a bad way where you are so just in your head about, I have to do this. Oh my God, I forgot to do this. Oh my God, what's the next? Oh my God. Like, and then you're like so in it that you're just like spiraling. And what's funny is that like the audience can see that, right? Like they can see if you're like absolutely soaring and just interpreting and just so in it, and they can see it in your face and in your body language and in your playing when you are just overly in your head and just thinking about every little detail. And I feel like for me personally, I love performing when I'm most in my head is right before, and like 95% of the time when I'm performing, I feel so in it. I love being on stage. I hate like presentations and I hate the spotlight on me, but when it comes to performance, I love it. I eat it up.
Yeah.
And I feel like being in that like state and that like that's what I feel like keeps the performer going, right? Like you, that nervous feeling and then like the adrenaline, and then you do your performance and you're so happy, and that feeling of like relief and like just like a weight off your shoulders after, like that's the feeling that I feel like I stay performing for.
Exactly.
And I feel like that being said, there are times, because a performance is never gonna be 100% what you're expecting, where it doesn't feel that way, where you were way too in your head, you just felt so uncomfortable. You're like, sometimes it's kind of like you don't even feel like you can like have control of your body, because it's just like you just go like numb, and then you play after and then you just don't feel good. Like you're like, oh my God, my classmates are judging me, my teacher's disappointed, like there's like, you know, like it's, you're gonna have moments like that too. But I feel like the approach that I like to take to like stay present is just, I feel like at the end of the day, you fully have to trust yourself, because no one else is going to trust you if you don't trust yourself. If you don't trust that you are going to give your best and present what you have to offer, no one else is going to believe that. You are not going to be convincing. And I feel like I've really had to learn throughout my undergrad and to build that confidence, not in an egotistical way. I feel like you shouldn't be that musician that is an egotistical musician, but you want to have confidence in yourself to the point where you are confident enough to like display your playing for anyone, no matter the setting, no matter what you're asked to perform. Because once you do enough of that, then it just becomes so comfortable. You're just like so sure of yourself, and it's taking me a long time to get there, but I feel like I'm at a point where I am like confident enough to like show people what I have, what I can do, and like how I can play, and like my artistry, musicality, and everything. And when I'm with that mindset, then I start to feel like I felt so comfortable in my performances recently, because I feel like I made that like alteration and being like, I'm prepared, I know what to expect, I feel confident in myself, like I have people rooting for me, like all, kind of like a mixture of everything we just said, right. And like having that alteration, I feel like has helped me stay so present in a good way in my performances, and it just it's like such a good feeling to have, I feel like.
100%. I think going off what you said, there is a very fine line between being too removed and being too in your head.
Yeah.
I remember I used to get such bad performance anxiety when I first started college that I would play in studio class or I'd perform in any capacity and I wouldn't remember anything. Like I would completely just black out, which I don't think is good. But then there's also the flip side of that where you're so in your head that you can't focus on anything except the individual notes and everything you have to remember about the piece.
Yeah.
So I think it is kind of finding a balance. And what helps me with that is like what you were saying, kind of removing the ego part. So instead of telling myself, oh, my teacher's going to think this, my friends are going to think this, the committee's going to think this, it's more about like what is the overall purpose of the music, not what people are going to think about you. Yeah. And I kind of have to humble myself before going on stage. I have to like tell myself it's not about you. It's not about like people's perceptions of you. They just want to hear good music.
Yeah. 100%. I agree. We kind of covered like, you know, because we said how mistakes and not playing perfectly is just something that's going to happen. It's, you know, so when those mistakes do happen and then we're like, oh no, that was not what we were supposed to be doing, like what advice would you have for students who fear like making those like same mistakes and errors on stage, and like just like advice on that in general?
I think sometimes it can be hard to get over a mistake in a performance. Like once it happens, then you get in your head about it and then you can't focus on what you're doing in that moment.
Yeah.
I think there's no easy fix to avoid that. It's just kind of something that our brain naturally does. But I would say that when I'm listening to a performance and someone makes a mistake, I'm not thinking about that for the rest of their performance. Only us that's telling ourselves that narrative that people are fixating on that one mistake. Especially if the rest of your piece is very musically convincing, I don't go home thinking about like this one out of tune note or this one like section that wasn't completely technically flawless. I'm more thinking about like the impact that the music had on me and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it can be difficult in the moment if you make a mistake to recover from that. I would just say, don't dwell on it. The audience probably won't remember it, so why should it impact the rest of your performance?
Another thing that I've been really struggling with, because it's a habit, is I think we almost feel like we need to let people know that we made a mistake.
Yeah.
So people make like a grimace or make a face or smile. And I 100% do the same thing. And I'm told almost every performance or studio class to not do that because it's been such a habit. And I think part of it comes from like, oh, like I made a mistake, so I cringe. But also I feel like part of it is just like an acknowledgement to let people know like that was a mistake. Like I don't play that way. But I feel like it almost has the opposite effect. Now you're showing that you made a mistake. Right. They might have no idea that you messed up. Now you are fully admitting to it to those people. And I feel like that's my advice, is to not, like, don't make a face. Don't acknowledge the mistake. Like, you, like, a smart performer knows how to quickly, like, reconvene and move on and make, make the mistake part of the performance almost, right?
Exactly.
Because I feel like Once you acknowledge it within yourself, you acknowledge it on your face and your body language, and now not only you know, everyone else knows, and it's just, you know, so I feel like don't, like, as best to your capability, don't acknowledge it. Just keep moving on. And it's just, it's okay. It happened. You just keep going. Yeah. And I feel like that's my advice for like in the moment mistakes, and like just move on. It'll be okay.
And I remember, I think it was Yo-Yo Ma who said, someone asked him, how do you not make mistakes when you're on stage?
Yeah.
And he replied, oh, I make mistakes all the time. I just know how to recover.
100%.
So I think it's knowing how to recover and how to not let those mistakes get in the way of the rest of the piece.
100%. Agreed.
So now we want to talk a little bit about imposter syndrome. For anyone who doesn't know, this is kind of just feeling that you're out of place or that the things that you get in life aren't deserved. You don't deserve to be where you are or any of the accomplishments that you have in life. So, Maya, have you ever faced moments where you felt like you didn't deserve your place in a program or an ensemble? And how did you deal with those feelings?
Oh, 100%. I feel imposter syndrome daily. Like, when I, like, you know, people talk about, like, oh, it's such a high-level program, high-level school, high-level studio, the high-level ensemble. And then you're like, oh, I could never get in then. And then when you do, then you start being like, wait, maybe it was just, like, an easy level. Or, like, maybe people were just saying that. Like no way I would have got. I feel like those are constant thoughts in my head. And I go back and forth between being like, oh, like, I'm so worthy of getting into this. And I'm like, wait, like I feel like I don't deserve it. There's so many talented people around me, which obviously is still a true statement. Like, there's so much talent everywhere. And I feel like it's definitely, like, a hard feeling to get over, because it's, like, at the end of the day, we're people. We judge, we compare, we, it's hard to not look at it from, like, your lens and seeing other people and seeing what they're doing and people getting into this, people getting into that, you getting rejected from this. And then it's just, like, it's really hard to get over it. But I feel like how I deal with it is, I don't know, at the end of the day, it's fully, like, what you can do for yourself and not what you can do for, like, everyone else. And it's, like, if you got into, like, your dream school or your dream program, like, you fully worked so hard to get to that place. Right. And I don't think that, like, looking at the people around you or the prestige of the or whatever you got into should affect that feeling at all, right? Like, I feel like why take such a, like, a prideful moment away just because you're like, oh, like, I don't deserve that. Like, that's right. Such a harsh feeling. And I think, you know, how I was talking about how in performance, like, the mindset of confidence really affects it. I feel like same goes for this. When you are not confident in yourself, then that shows. And then
it's kind of a cycle.
Yeah, it's like a cycle. Right. And you have to be fully confident and know in yourself, like, no, like, I worked so hard and I did so much for me to be able to accomplish what I do, and I don't think that anything should take away from that. I feel like that's how I feel.
One thing we talked about in psychology that's really similar to what you're saying,
yeah,
is how we train people how to perceive us in mm-hmm. a way, like, yeah. how we carry ourselves and how we perceive ourselves, like, is subconsciously translated to other people. Mm-hmm. So if we internally think that we don't deserve to be somewhere or we don't deserve something, that's going to come off, and then other people will subconsciously start to treat us like we don't maybe deserve that.
100%.
And then it's just a spiral of, like, going back and forth, and it kind of locks you in that position of feeling imposter syndrome. Yeah. So, yeah, I think also something I want to add is social media and its role on imposter syndrome, especially because people will naturally want to post their highlights and the best version of themselves on social media. So that can include, like, winning jobs and competitions and seeing all of that, especially if you're already feeling a bit of imposter syndrome, can mm-hmm. only make it worse.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if there's a direct solution to that other than limiting social media access, or, I don't know, maybe blocking people that you don't necessarily want to interact with, or it makes you feel bad to see their content and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think social media does play a big role in it. And we have to remember that what people are posting is maybe like 2% of their lives.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time and a lot of rejection that goes unannounced on social media. 100%. Like, no one's posting from their practice room, like, their mental breakdown like, not being able to play a specific piece.
Yeah.
So I think putting it in perspective, and when we see something online that maybe makes us feel behind or like we're not deserving of those things or being where we are, just reminding ourselves that that's not an easy journey. Like, that doesn't just happen. Yeah. There's a lot of things that we don't know about them and we don't know the full story. So, yeah, I think that helps with comparison.
And even those, like, talking about social media, I feel like something else that became pretty popular, especially starting COVID, is, like, practice accounts. And people posting posting clips of their practicing, of their performances, of their rehearsals, of just, like, sight reading and things like that. And I feel like I've been hard on myself when I hear it. I'm like, wow, like their practice session of, I don't know, the Tchaikovsky violin concerto, that sounds amazing. They're playing the passage perfectly. Who knows? They could have recorded that 26 times,
right,
and
exactly.
Recorded it and posted the best version of themselves, which, to be honest, I would do too. I would probably post what I sound best in, and that's just what it is. So I feel like just, like, when you think about it in that perspective and getting out of your head about, like, oh, like, everyone is perfect all the time, which is not true, and being like, oh, that is just a version of themselves that they put on the internet, because right. That's how you want to be perceived. That's how I want to be perceived. That's how you want to be perceived.
Yeah.
And I feel like 100% I agree with how social media has definitely played a big factor into the imposter syndrome, like, effect. And it's just, it's especially as musicians, I feel like it just makes it so much worse, because you're so, like, your playing is so vulnerable and sharing that, you know? And I feel like, yeah just like, no, getting out of that space. If you need to delete social media, like you said, that is definitely like a healthy choice, and not just for imposter syndrome, but for your mental health in general.
Yeah.
And which we kind of cover, since we have an episode about like mental health and things like that. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think one thing to also be aware of is that it's not natural for us to be consuming like so much content and getting so many updates on people's lives. I mean, before social media, you would actually have to know someone, or you would have to call them to know about these major achievements. It's really not normal for us to be seeing like 10 plus posts of people like achieving huge milestones in their life every day. And most of the time, people that we're not even that close to.
Yeah. It's like exposure that you didn't ask for, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's very overwhelming too at times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just stepping away and also remembering that it's only a small portion of their lives and their story. And I think capitalism makes it seem like we should all be achieving every single day, or like there's a timeline for when we need to have certain things accomplished.
Yeah.
When in reality, there's not. Like, I know a lot of people, or I don't know them personally, but I've heard stories of people who are insane child prodigies and then they burnt out and switched careers. Like, you never know about people's timelines, and it's different from person to person.
100%. And it's subjective at the end of the day. It's music that, you know, we're talking about, that's supposed to be a subjective and personal thing, and there's no standard to it, right? There's no...
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Just like everything in life.
Just like everything in life. You are so right.
Timeline.
Yeah.
And then kind of the last thing on this topic, how do you keep perspective when things feel overwhelming and you're just overall questioning whether or not you're cut out for classical music?
When things feel overwhelming, I think sometimes I like to like listen to recordings of myself, because like I think when let's say I'm working on a piece in the moment and I listen to it and I'm thinking about every little detail that I was practicing in the moment, I'm like, oh my god, that's not how it went. But then you'll come back to it maybe like a month later, right? And you're like, wait, I'm actually very proud of the way I sound, or the way I interpreted this, and I was so like anti like sounding good, I guess, that I missed out on what I was trying to make, which is just music for people to enjoy. So I feel like hearing myself, even though most people hate hearing themselves because it just makes them feel worse about themselves, but sometimes I hear myself and it's like a good reminder of being like, oh my god, wait, I get why I have come so far and I have worked so hard to be able to produce music in this way and be able to convey a message that like I wouldn't be able to if I didn't play music.
Right.
So I feel like seeing the bigger picture, because it's really hard to when you're a student, you're super busy, you're constantly on the go, there's never enough time to rehearse, to practice, to study, to sleep, to eat, you know? And I feel like a lot of the times I just have to like sit back and be like, okay, let me just step out of my like tiny little bubble right now and see this bigger perspective that I haven't been able to see, and like try to enjoy the moments more than be so hard on myself about, I feel like.
Right.
And then when I do that, I feel like I acknowledge and I become appreciative of the things that I have imposter syndrome about.
100%. Kind of similar to that, I like to as cheesy as it sounds, practice gratitude or acknowledge the things that I'm grateful for within music. Like, I get to study at my dream school. Yeah. I get to have the support of my parents to pursue this field.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that I'm so fortunate to have.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, people go their whole lives in a career that they absolutely hate, and we're lucky enough to be able to do what we love and to be able to have a passion that we found so young.
Yeah.
So I think stepping out of my little bubble of perfection and looking at all the things that I do have, or like that have gone well in my life so far, mm-hmm. is really important for overcoming imposter syndrome.
100%.
Yeah. And then in terms of the cutout for classical music aspect, for me, I kind of like to just have fun with music if I start mm-hmm. to feel overwhelmed and like I'm not cut out for it. Because if you look at musicians in other genres like jazz and pop, it's not as focused on everything has to be perfect. Like, they'll just jam and they'll just play music for fun, and it doesn't matter if they like make a mistake. Like, you know how they say if you're improvising and you play a wrong note, you just play it again. Like, you make it sound intentional.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think just making it as fun as possible mm-hmm. when you're feeling overwhelmed is really useful.
Yes.
And going back to just like why you enjoyed it in the first place.
Yes. Agreed.
Well, thank you so much for listening to our first episode of Behind the Beat.
We hope you enjoy. These are some topics that are very prevalent and I feel like are very needed to be talked about. And we enjoyed kind of, you know, diving in and answering some questions that the other people may have had, or that things that we wish that we could talk about more with other people.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So stay tuned for our next 4 episodes, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
A podcast hosted by Sylvia
and Maya.